Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. There are nonprofit organizations in many sectors of life, from education to arts to media. But what nonprofits have in common is how they're governed through a board of directors. But what makes some boards successful in guiding a nonprofit group while others spin their wheels? A new book on nonprofit boards offers advice in just that area. It's called You and Your Nonprofit Board. The book includes chapters by two Milwaukee nonprofit executives, Frank Martinelli and Pat Wisbinski, who are with us in the studio. It's edited by Terry Temkin, who joins us on the phone from Florida. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so great to be here, Mitch.
Let me start with a big question about nonprofit board management, if you will. What's at stake from this issue? You know, why write this book? Why is it important for nonprofits to be taking kind of a big picture approach to the work of their boards? And I'll throw that to all three of you.
You know, one of the differences between for-profit corporations and nonprofits for many years, the traditional look at the sector, is that the board is the difference. Both have profit motive in that they want surplus funds if you're a nonprofit. But the way the board acts and oversees the organization has been typically different in the nonprofit sector. They've been more engaged in looking at many responsibilities besides the bottom line.
And it's a particular kind of board. It's a governing board. And the word governance, from the Greek word meaning to steer the ship, there's a lot at stake because the board, more than any other leadership entity in the nonprofit, is responsible for charting the future course.
Terry Temkin, what are your thoughts in terms of why this is so key?
I would like to indicate why it's so key now. I think Pat and Frank did a great job talking about why governance is important, why a book on governance is important. What differentiates this book and why this was so important now is that in the last few years, certainly since the economic downturn, we have realized in this sector that we need to do things differently. And you have many people who have sat on a lot of boards over many, many years who feel they understand governance, they know what to do, and unfortunately it hasn't been working very well. And we've really had to change course. And the reason why now and the reason why for this book is to help people see some of the new ways that they might think about doing things in order to be more successful so that we have stronger communities in the long run.
What hasn't been working so well? Why, you know, what have been the common missteps, either in the relationship between nonprofits themselves and their boards or just in the work of the boards themselves?
Certainly the whole issue of how do we fund an organization at a time like this, and that's not fully the board's responsibility to take that on as a sole responsibility, but boards have had to be very creative in how they approach it. It's looking at the size of the board, how the board can approach things. We've learned that one of probably the most important things is that governance isn't necessarily happening in the boardroom anymore. You've got funders who are dictating the direction an organization should go. They'll say, we'll be happy to give you money if you provide XYZ services that we know you haven't really been providing in the past, but this is what we want.
You know, Mitch, one of the things that I've seen over the years is that we have this concept of throw a group of people from disparate backgrounds together at the same board table and say, go govern. But it's not something that comes to us naturally. It is something that we have to learn how to do. How do we keep the mission of the organization in the front of us as we make a wide array of decisions about money, staffing, and vision of the organization?
I think another thing that really gets in the way of good governance for many organizations, for many nonprofit boards, is in this period of rapid, profound change, too many boards spend too much of their time looking backwards. And clearly, there's a stewardship responsibility. We have to ask questions about performance year to date, things of that nature. But increasingly, there is the realization, and it's reflected in the book in so many of the contributions, that a great board needs to spend more and more of its time in meetings and outside of meetings looking up and out at the horizon. What's happening? Which of those changes and trends are going to have the greatest impact on the people that we're presuming to serve, and then make decisions accordingly?
Well, and let me ask you about that notion, maybe all three of you, about that notion of training board members and recruiting the right ones. Can anybody know for certain who is likely to be a visionary until they make it to the board?
I think that there are personality traits that really move the group along. And those that we would say are always asking big picture questions are wonderful. But if we have a whole room full of big picture people, nobody's going to be writing the thank you notes or thinking about the details. So when you put a board together, you're really looking for a wide array of both personalities and professional skills and talents.
There's a statement that's gone around for a long time that when you've seen one board, you've seen one board. And you can have people who have sat on many different boards, and they have that experience. I am 100% behind Pat's answer. I think, though, that what is very helpful, and Frank alluded to it in his response, is that when you pull this group of very strategically selected people together, they still need to know about this organization. They still need to know about the culture of this organization. They still need to know how they can best represent this organization. And they need some training to do that. Nobody, as I think Pat said earlier, nobody's born knowing how to do this.
And there's no question that being on a board is an incredible opportunity to learn how to be a better, more effective leader. But so much is riding on what boards are responsible for that we have to do a certain amount of due diligence before someone comes onto the board. We have to, in a sense, move some of the process further upstream. We don't wait to see what we've gotten after we've gotten the invitation answered in the affirmative. We've got to spend time with prospective board members to really get a sense of them. What kind of a leader, what kind of a contribution will they make to the board? And is it in line with this notion of visionary, future-focused leadership?
Well, and I wonder if there's a certain amount of making sure that the board members understand their expectations before they take their position on the board.
Absolutely. We don't do that enough, frankly. I see, and I know that Pat and Frank will agree, too often you have people who say, please, 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 we want you on this board. You're dynamic. You're bright. You're perfect for it. You won't have to do very much, I promise. You just have to show up at meetings once a month. And what that does is really set a very sad trajectory for the board and for the individual, because either this person who is so bright and dynamic, et cetera, is going to say, then why do you want me on the board? And they will run the other direction, or they'll come on and they'll believe you, and then they don't do anything. The setting of the expectations is critical.
Yeah, picking up on that, I think sometimes we just make the assumption that if we tell people what they're actually getting themselves into, they'll run for the door. I would argue that if they run for the door after we've told them what we really need, then let them run for the door. I think sometimes the opposite happens. We tell people the kind of challenge that we're offering them, and especially today and especially among young people, they want to hear that. They want to be part of a group that is really making a difference.
And active engagement is critical, not to just come to meetings and listen to somebody else's report about what they did last month, but what are the thorny problems we need to think about? What's the skill set that we need at this table in order to move us to the next level, whatever that might be? I think that most people would rather come and be active rather than just write a check. Because if you're just going to write a check, there's a different kind of board to sit on rather than the governing body.
Well, and Pat, you spoke about this notion that nothing will get done if you just have big picture thinkers on a board, say, or even like one type of personality on the board. Are nonprofits – you kind of write about this – the nonprofits in need of thinking about how these boards are subdivided, or the organizational structure that exists within the board?
Well, I often, as an exercise when I'm working with the board, is to ask them to draw a picture of their corporate structure. How many appendages are there and how do they relate to each other? It's interesting that most times the end result is one or two boxes on a page, when in reality there are many different working groups that feed information to a board so that it can make decisions, or the board discusses something that someone else can make a decision. But to put it in writing in a form of a picture to see how those relationships are accountable to each other is a very important exercise. There are many different models. We can use boxes and circles and triangles and stack them on each other as traditional boards have done. But in the book, I write about a Nautilus model where we kind of start in the center with the board and just keep adding chambers as tasks are needed around the center of the organization. There's also what I call the farmhouse model, where it's just whenever we need something, we just put in a new outbuilding. So it doesn't really matter what model you use. What matters is that you are aware of the model. You can draw a picture of it and understand how all the appendages relate to each other.
Frank Martinelli, it seems unlikely that these are the kinds of changes that can occur overnight, especially given that organizations are unlikely to throw out an entire board and replace it with new members. What are the baby steps that organizations ought to take as they re-envision what their boards can and should do?
Well, and before the first baby step is taken, we need to talk about leadership, that the kinds of things that we're alluding to, the kinds of changes that can make a good board a great board, it all requires leadership, leadership on the part of the board itself, and leadership within the executive staff, the CEO, the executive director, working in partnership with board leadership. That willingness, that readiness to change is just absolutely essential. Beyond that, a lot of organizations begin with some kind of a snapshot of what currently exists, a board assessment, and there are several tools. A number of them are referenced in the book. So taking a snapshot of capacity within the board at this point in time, giving the board an opportunity to identify the short list of priorities. Rome wasn't built in a day and neither was a great board. What are the things that we're going to work on first? And I think in that selection of the short list of priorities, thinking about where's the leverage. We can't do everything at once, but where are the areas that if we really focused attention, if we succeeded in those two or three areas, that would have a spillover effect because it's high leverage.
Terry Temkin, the title of the book leads one to believe that this is aimed at nonprofit managers, but it seems like it might behoove people who either are serving on boards or considering serving on boards to read this as well.
Actually, I would say the latter is more the case, and we would love to have the, quote, managers, whether they're executive directors or team leaders, read it. But I would extend that out and say that anyone who consults with nonprofit boards, anyone who is managing, let's say, our typical bank or law office or CPA office that wants its employees to become involved on boards, would get a good idea of what the expectations are when they would read something like this. So the audience is actually very broad.
I think that this book would be helpful to the small arts organization as well as the mid-sized social service organization or a very large institution such as a hospital or college board. The key is not that you read it from cover to cover, but if every board had one in their possession, this month somebody could read a chapter and say, this is how I think it applies to us. And you just do a round robin through the board so everybody gets a feel for it, but not everybody reads every piece because not every article relates to every organization.
And you don't need to read it cover to cover because there is not a surprise ending.
No.
It is very interesting stuff. And Frank Martinelli, Pat Wyszbinski, and Terry Temkin, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Terry Temkin is editor of the book, part of the In the Trenches series called You and Your Nonprofit Board. It includes chapters by Frank Martinelli, president of the Center for Public Skills Training in Milwaukee, and Pat Wyszbinski, president of Management Cornerstones in Milwaukee. They'll all be part of a book launch tomorrow afternoon at Redline, Milwaukee. There is a link to more from WUWM.com/Lake Effect. Another break now, and when we return, auto contributor Mark Savage takes on the idea of gizmo overload on your dashboard. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.